Resources for Tuesday, March 13, 2007. Open a hearing on House Bill 5050 and House Bill 5051, the Water Resources Department. Mr. Ward, I believe we left off at Key Performance Measure 9.
Yes, sir, that's correct. We did, for the record, Phil Ward with the Water Resources Department. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We did leave off, but go ahead, Debbie. Key Performance Measure 9, we did 1 through 8 yesterday and had some really great discussion, at least from our perspective. We thank you for that. And so let's talk about Key Performance Measure 9, and we'll try and click right through things today. Of course, subject to your pleasure, Mr. Chair. Key Performance Measure 9 relates to the average amount of time from the time you submit a water management and conservation plan to the time we issue our preliminary review of those plans. So what is a water management and conservation plan? A water management conservation plan is a document we require of, for example, a municipality who is wanting to grow into their water rights through what we call an extension. So municipalities don't have to perfect their entire water right immediately. They can grow into it over time according to the law. But to grow in and get more what we call green light water from us, so water they can actually use as they grow, they have to be doing water management and conservation planning. So this is a document that articulates how they're going to efficiently use their water, what they'll do in times of shortage, things of that nature. And historically, you can see we've spent way too long. Folks would turn these things in, and then it would literally take us years to tell them anything about them. Kind of a disincentive for the customer base to not pay attention to what they're sending us. So we made a real big effort in 04 and 05 to deal with that. You can see we took a little slip backwards in 06, so Debbie will show us why that happened. This is the reason we slipped back in 06. This is Bill Fuji, and he is our one sole employee that works on these water management conservation plans. Early in that year, he fell off his roof and compressed his spine and ruined his leg there, and we fell a little behind on our performance measure since he is the only staff person we do have working on that. We believe now with Bill back on the job, we're going to be able to right our trend line. So there is a proposed change in relation to this performance measure that Mr. Siebert and Debbie have worked on. Debbie, why don't you speak to that quickly?
Good morning. For the record, I'm Debbie Colbert with Water Resources Department, and we've been working with LFO staff on the next three measures, some minor changes to them. They all three measure our performance in terms of average time to do something, and LFO had a really great suggestion that instead we should be measuring the percent of time that we actually meet the goal. So instead of reporting this one in average time to the preliminary review, we would be reporting on how many of the plans that we reviewed did we do within our goal. So for example, last year we did about 25% of the plans within our goal timeline. And so we haven't done all of the historical data work, and we've discussed with LFO staff continuing to query our databases, get some historical data under the proposed change that we could use to set targets if the committee chose to change this performance measure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if there are no questions, we'll move on to Performance Measure 10. Again, another performance measure that relates to how long it takes us to do business. And when someone applies for a water right, the first step for us after we receive the application is to take an initial cut at whether we think they're going to be able to get a water right of the nature that they've requested. So in other words, if Representative Girard were to apply for a water right, we will try to give him an initial review to determine whether or not we think there's a good chance that he'll receive what he's asked for. If the answer is a pretty big no, then quite often the applicant will want to stop or back up, change, and they can recover a high percentage of their fees that they submitted at that point in time. So this is an important piece. Again, it's taken us historically too long to get that initial review out. You can see that we're making an attempt to bring that down, and we're making progress in that regard, using technology and streamlining our operations. So our average time is 4.5 months here in Oregon. That same process takes about 7 months in the state of Montana, and right now I'm not sure why, but the stats show over 10 years in the state of Washington to get their initial review out on a water right. I guess they're not granting many water rights these days, but that one got me frowning quite a bit too. And but at any rate, we're making some progress here. We think that's important. Our target's 45 days. We've reached 136.
Any questions on measures 9 and 10? Seeing none, let's go on to 11 and 12.
If we can, just before we leave 10, Mr. Chair, there's a proposed change on this performance measure. Debbie, go ahead and speak to us.
Again, this is a similar change. Instead of measuring the average time, we would switch to the percent of applications that we actually met our target in that given year.
Mr. Chair, members, we're to key performance measure number 11. And this is the average number of days from a transfer application filing to the final order issuance. This is, in my view, a particularly critical performance measure. A transfer is taking a water right that's located in one location and moving it somewhere else. And that could come when I, as a landowner, wanted to move a water right off a piece of property I held to another piece of property. I changed my farming practices. And so from an economic standpoint, I needed to move water from one place to another. So a transfer would occur in that instance. It might occur if Debbie wanted to take a water right that she held and place it in stream. As an in-stream water right, that could serve as a transfer. Or it could come in the case if Senator Nelson had some dry ground that he needed water on, and he approached his neighbor, Mr. Siebert, and actually purchased the water right from him. That could be transferred then to Senator Nelson's ground. This is a very complicated process because we have to make an affirmative finding that doing that transfer won't injure another water right. And so it's a complicated process. You can see that we made some good progress early this decade, and then we bumped up and slowed down a little bit. And we'll click the next slide and show you why that is. It relates to what we now fondly refer to as the old dogs. It had been our habit for years, Mr. Chair and members, to, when a transfer was too tough, they got shelved, and we found a way to do the easier transfers and not take action. And so one of the, I think I mentioned earlier in our performance, we sometimes reward good performance with bad assignments, and one of the things we asked Debbie to take over a while back was the transfer program, because we wanted to clean up this particular problem, this aversion to doing the real tough stuff, the old dogs. We actually found one old dog that recently moved out this year, had been there. Oh, gosh, where's that at? Oh, yeah, one of the oldest old dogs had been pending for 15 years and 10 months, or according to my notes, 5,795 days. Way too long. And our instructions to staff were, let's make a decision on these things. Let's get to the decision points, make decisions. If we happen to make a wrong one, then we'll back up and deal with it. But let's make some decisions and move forward. And so you'll see, and Debbie's actually instituted this little award, so when a member of the staff gets an old dog out, they get to keep this little symbol of that for the coming quarter, and we recognize them in a staff meeting. But we are, as you can see, let's back up one. As you can see from the 06 numbers, we are moving in the right direction again, and we're getting transfers out. It's our commitment not to leave people hanging, but to get them decisions so they know where they stand one way or another. Mr. Chair, we're to number 12 with your permission. We do have a proposed change that there, the percent of transfers receiving a final order within 90 days. So we're moving to that percentage figure again. Okay, let's go on to number 12. That's all right. This, Mr. Chair and members, is what I refer to as our shameless workload indicator performance measure. Essentially, this shows you the workload that our staff has. Essentially, our staff is responsible for dealing with points of diversion, making sure that people are taking, as we've talked about earlier, the amounts of water they're entitled to, etc. Right now, we have the highest number of points of diversion per staff in history, over 2,600. And if our staff were to visit each point of diversion once a month, that would require us to visit about 130 diversions a day. So you can see this relates directly to our field staff and the POP you all will be considering to enhance our field capabilities. The workload in the field is greater than it's ever been. Okay, number 13, administrative transactions. Again, this is just basically how efficient are we in getting our administrative transactions done. You can see from the graph that we've moved around here. In 05 was our most efficient year in terms of administrative transactions. We dropped down this year. There's a specific reason for that, however, and that relates to the fact that we changed the process, so we're no longer paying as many bills outright. Our staff are now using the SPOTS card, which I forget even what the acronym stands for, but it's a little credit card issued to state agencies. And in streamlining our processes, they're using this card, and so they're paying less individual bills. It's actually streamlined our processes, but it does bump down our performance there. The next piece here in relation to this group, though, that we did want to mention is that our staff in our administrative services section, we believe is a good group, and in fact they've been awarded since 1993 with the Gold Star Award by the State Controllers Division, wherein they've been ascertained to be top performers in terms of our accounting practices over time. That's largely, a credit to Mike Allman and his staff. Mike, who's been with us here, they do a great job. So, Mr. Chair, do we need to answer any questions at this juncture?
Well, let's see. Any questions on, I believe, 11, 12, or 13? Being none, I guess we can go to the final.
Okay. Mr. Chair, this is our final performance measure. It's our newest performance measure. It's our customer service satisfaction performance measure. We were really appreciative to have some really good help in crafting this performance measure and the customer service survey that we did as a result. April Snell, who's a C-Grant fellow with us this year and had some specific training on customer survey work, actually put our customer survey together, we put it out this last year. You can see the results. Very interesting to me, because our customers rated us highest in helpfulness, which is a good thing. They rated us lowest in timeliness, which, as you've seen some of the other performance measures that we've talked about, in the last few minutes, you can understand. Our processes are complex, and they, just by law, there are prescribed time frames that they have to go through. But again, as we also talked about earlier, we're working very hard to change the timeliness piece. It would be my hope in the years ahead that we see that timeliness bar bump up. Again, as we get away from those multiple-year backlogs that have been historically a part of the agency's portfolio, and we're moving away from due to some of our process changes, we hope to see that bump up. You know, accuracy, people felt fairly good about. Expertise, they felt good about. I was surprised, given the amount of use we have of our web page by the citizens in general of the state, that they didn't rate availability of information higher. I think that a lot of that may have to do with the complexity for a lot of folks working through some of these processes on their own and just not knowing how to navigate our information as well. Overall, they rated our service at 73%. So I'll stop there, Mr. Chair, and be happy to respond to any questions.
Any questions? Seeing none, I guess we can go on to prioritization.
Mr. Chair, I think Paul has asked us, with your permission, to move to House Bill discussion of House Bill 5051.
Yes, we could do that now. How long do you think that will take?
We don't think it'll take very long.
Okay,
Mr. Chair.
Okay, please proceed.
House Bill 5051 is a bill that was... Well, Debbie, do you want to go ahead and cover this for us?
Absolutely. House Bill 5051 is a ratification of fees adopted by the Water Resources Commission in 2006. And it's fees that are associated with groundwater changes to groundwater registrations. Last session, the bill was passed that gave our commission the authority to allow holders of groundwater registrations to make changes to them, similar to how we allow certificated and other rights to make transfers of their uses. Groundwater registrations are uses of groundwater that predate the Groundwater Code of 1955 and haven't been adjudicated through a formal court proceeding. We have about 4,000 of these statewide. They're mostly in the northwest, southwest, and a few out in north central regions of the state. Up until this bill last session, the holders of these registrations, even if their well had failed, technically there was no process for them to move over and drill a new well, and without risking potentially their use of the groundwater in a future future adjudication. So following the session, our department convened a rules advisory committee to help us create rules both for the process that we would use to consider these changes to groundwater registrations and also to help us set the fees associated with this. And as you can see in House Bill 5051, the fees that our commission adopted in August 2006 would basically for... a change in place of use, the proposed fee is $350. For any other modification or for two or more changes in place of use, the proposed fee is $500. And the reason why there's the difference is that place of use changes are more straightforward for us to process, and so the Rules Advisory Committee recognized that and thought that the department should charge less in those instances. And so those are the fees that you see in House Bill 5051, and those were the fees that our commission adopted in August 2006.
Yes, Representative Gura.
Chair. Debbie, what were these fees prior to this move to higher fees?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there was no... We didn't allow these kinds of changes by law prior to the commission getting authority from the legislature in 2005. So people who held these types of uses, they couldn't make any changes. So this is a new fee through a new process. And it's very... It's similar to our transfer application fees.
Yes. And is that I think you just gave me the answer to the next question. And that is, what did you base these, since you're establishing a new fee, in essence, what did you base that fee amount on?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we looked to the transfer application processing cost, and that was generally what the Rules Advisory Committee based it on. But I will note that the House bill that gave our commission this authority basically said that we could adopt fees up to $500. So we didn't have the authority to go over that amount, even though our transfer application fees can exceed $500 too.
One final question. And do these fees actually cover your actual costs?
Mr. Chair, Representative, if we use the transfer program as our to base these new applications, we've only gotten two in since we adopted the rules. But we generally, across the board, we recover about 30% of our costs. And so we would expect it would be a similar cost recovery in the groundwater registration changes.
Thank you.
Representing Fulton.
I have the same question as Representative Verrett about cost recovery, but a follow-up to that will be, so statutorily, your fees are limited to $500. Is that right? Or just for this particular transaction, or for the groundwater transfers?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is correct. The bill that gave us the authority to make these kinds of changes capped us at $500.
One follow-up is, how do you have a sense or anticipate how many transfers you'll be conducting per year? Is it going to be anything similar to the number of surface water transfers that we see?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we anticipate that at least initially there will be a lot of unmet demand. So we would anticipate, I'm sorry that I can't remember off the top of my head how many we had predicted, but I think we were talking about 50 per year, at least initially.
Thank you. Yes, we have nothing additional. Do you need to, is there anything more you need to address with this?
Do you need a motion?
Oh, no, we're not.
I think that's all we need. If we've answered all your questions, Mr. Chair, we'd hope you'd move the bill at the appropriate time.
Preferably before June 29th, right?
Yes, sir.
Now we'll go on to program prioritization. You have an extensive number of sheets defining different agency prioritization efforts. For the sake of really what we need to focus on, why don't we go to your 3182 reductions here?
Okay, we can do that. So, Mr. Chair, we do have a brief slide presentation that kind of clicks through some of the different priorities in a simplified fashion from your document there. We could.
I think we have plenty of time. Go ahead and go through that.
With your permission, could we go back, Debbie, to where we just were? Okay, so program priorities. You won't have these slides in your book, but I just, with your permission, Mr. Chair, we'll just click through them quickly. Go on, Debbie, if you would. Okay, so we used the Fulfill Our Mandates, constitutional, federal, and state law as a deciding factor. We used the governor's principles, long terms, most Oregonians served, return on investment, and then we determined whether these things were part of our core functions and whether we could demonstrate results with these programs. And hands down, in the agency, water distribution, making sure people with the right to use that water get it, came out number one. Go ahead. Number two was the water rights program. Some of you may remember, if you were around this agency a decade ago, that we had a tremendous backlog in water rights applications. And that's essentially this program. It's a great credit to one, the legislature who helped us make some statutory adjustments to how we did that business, and then our staff, that there no longer is a significant backlog at all in the water rights program. It's number two in our priority list. Very important. Number three, won't belabor this, but the adjudication program comes up high in our priorities. Again, you can't manage water. One of the great challenges for us in the Klamath is we can't manage water down there yet, according to Oregon water law, because we don't have that adjudication done. Number three in the priority list. Number four, water right changes. This is the program we just discussed, water right transfers. One reason this is so important, members, is that as water is less available for new appropriation, the way we're handling economic development needs is we're moving it around. So we're able to move it from one property to another, from one landowner to another, from one use to another. This is the program that does that. As we mentioned, we still have a fairly significant backlog in this program. It'll take you about 2.5 years to get a transfer through us if you come in tomorrow with one. But as you can see from our trend lines, we're biting the tough bullets on this one and doing the things we need to do to get those trends going in the right direction. Number five, public safety. We operate the dam safety program in the state of Oregon. I think it's important to note that we don't bump into the feds. The large federal projects, the dam safety issues are addressed by the federal agencies. We have a good partnership. We share expertise, but we don't bump into each other and thus waste public resources. But we have all the smaller dams, the non-federal dams in the state of Oregon are under our authority. Occasionally, we will have a dam failure in this state. We've had a couple in the last couple of years, small storage projects that you don't hear much about except for the folks in the local neighborhood. But we do have this program, and it is one of our priorities. Go ahead. A well construction inspection, how wells are constructed and whether that construction is maintained in a manner that allows the most efficient and effective use of the resource is an important program in the agency. And we have part of our field program is a corps of well inspectors that move around the state looking at how wells are constructed and maintained. Information systems, you've heard this already, it's a key part of our equation. Go ahead. Just a quick note on surface and groundwater investigations. We talked about this yesterday. Again, gathering, we're a science-based agency. For us to manage the resource effectively, we have to have the science in place to do that. That's what this is all about. So here's an example of a very dapperly dressed water master out collecting some stream flow measurements.
Doing some fishing at the same time.
You know, that looks like a fishing outfit. It looks suspiciously like a fishing outfit. Yes, sir. Go ahead. So we wanted to note those for you, particularly 1 through 9. You can see the rest of the priorities all the way through the rest of the agency. The thing I'd note is that you'll see things on this bottom half of our priority list that are pretty important. And the Water Resources Department is truly an integrated program. And what we do with the Water Resources Commission obviously drives the programs that you saw earlier in this listing. And so it's truly an integrated program. It's difficult to make these priority calls, but that's how we did it at the staff and commission level. So, Mr. Chair, we're to where you wanted us to be a few minutes ago, the House Bill 3182. I'd be happy to answer any questions on the priority list if folks have them.
Representative Dink Carlton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, when I was reading through your priority list over the weekend, I had a very exciting weekend. I guess I was, and I realize that you probably have multiple priorities, and this isn't necessarily, I mean, the question I have is this, you know, very hierarchical, in other words. When I read through this, I have to say priority 8, which we had pretty robust discussion about yesterday, the groundwater investigations and surface water measurement. Reading through it, it's sort of like you can't do some of the other things, the higher priorities, without meeting those goals in priority 8 first. And I don't know if you want to go back to that. But so how do you reconcile that? Because obviously you have to make decisions about how you allocate your resources, you know, where your staff time goes to. So that was a concern that I had when I saw that that was priority eight. It seemed a little low on the priority level given our discussions and the concerns that we have about adequately managing the resource.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think you've identified an excellent point. And one is that there's not much room between priorities 1 through 10 in our list, that it's a very integrated portfolio. And so what we do in number 8 does indeed impact everything above it in that priority ranking. And I think, and these were originally conducted a biennium ago, again, when we were looking at the very difficult cuts that we were facing as an agency. And the choice was made at that point that if we had to defer for a period of time under a short funding scenario, some of our active science work, which is what this is, then to keep our Water Master Corps in place and some of those kind of things, those day-to-day activities working around the state, then we'd have to do that. But to imply long-term that this activity was less valuable than water distribution, I'm not sure we could. But certainly for the short-term look in terms of maintaining the day-to-day operations, that's, I think, what this represents.
Mr. Clark, can I just follow up with a comment? And I appreciate that, Phil. I know you guys have been under duress for about a decade looking at your funding. But I just want to, for the record, and emphasize for this committee that, I mean, this, you're a science-based agency. And without that scientific information to back up the decisions that you make, I think we run the risk of mismanaging the resource. So I mean, I'm going to be, you know, pushing really hard that we adequately fund the science part of your programs because it affects the decisions that you make on a daily basis.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think a lot of the discussion that we've had the last few days is indicative of that. I think we're definitely getting to that kind of tipping point where the decisions we make in the years ahead, if we don't base them on sound science, could come back to bite us.
Thank
so
you.
We'd agree. Mr. Chair, we're ready to go on to this unless there are further questions.
And to remind everyone, I believe everyone knows this is the HB 3182 that requires agencies to identify 10% potential reductions.
So, Will, this is a painful slide for us, Mr. Chair. We don't like to talk about it, but we'll spend just a minute. And I want to tell you the rationale behind which these cuts were identified. We had for years since 1999 when we began to experience the first significant budget reductions in this agency, done what we called thinning the spokes. So we'd shave a little more off every program and attempt to keep doing everything that we had done in the past. As we looked at having to identify 10% reductions this time, it was apparent to us that there were no that that philosophy would not work at this level of a cut any longer. And so what we've identified here are very significant activities, program areas, and these cuts would essentially do away with some of those program areas. Our Oregon plan activities, the 4 FTE we have out specifically dedicated to getting water back in stream and doing that kind of work, would go away under these cuts. Two layers of our science staff and two transfer positions. So none of these are recommended alternatives from our perspective, Mr. Chair. I'd like to get that slide off as quickly as we can.
Any questions? I guess we are finally to the point of going through policy option packages. We have 13 of them, I believe. Why don't we go through two at a time, and then we'll go to questions.
I'd be happy to do that, Mr. Chair. So we do have 13 policy option packages. And all of them, every one of these are linked to agency goals and key performance measures. It's interesting that, and I think one of the things that the co-chairs talked about early on in the process that we that our ears perked up on was, should policy option packages being a drive changes in our key performance measure targets? These option packages will not, or do not, we have not implemented new targets as a result. Essentially, these POPs do three different things relative to the targets. Either they continue an existing position, so a large number of what you're looking at will continue existing positions that have been limited duration in the past. And those positions are included in the current targets. Or secondly, they're part of a strategy to meet targets we haven't been meeting. Or thirdly, the targets are set under rules and we haven't adjusted them for that reason. So, again, all of these policy option packages are linked to our goals and performance measures. So for some reason, my pops are not sitting under here. Okay, the first is POP 111. Mr. Chair, this is an interesting POP. It continues a half of an FTE other fund that we have not yet filled, if I'm correct. Debbie, is that correct?
That's correct.
And the reason we haven't filled it is because we didn't until just recently have the funds in the bank account to support it. But this continues a half a position that you all gave to us 4 years ago when you established the Reimbursement Authority Program. We have conducted that program with existing staff to this point in time. And again, this is the program where an applicant can ask to pay the true cost of the program to move themselves up in the queue. And we actually have a core of 9 contractors that do this work for us. And we contract with one of those folks to get some of the nuts and bolts work out of the way so they can get their application done more quickly. This is other fund, continues that half a position. The next POP is 131, stream data collection and processing. And again, this continues a position in Eastern Oregon that's federally funded that does a lot of our stream gauging work in that part of the state. So it supports our gauging stations, monitors compliance, and provides data that's extremely important to how we manage the resource in that part of the state. So, Mr. Chair, we've done 2 here. Is that? Would you like me to stop for questions?
Any questions at this point? I have one question, actually, on POP 111, the half FTE. You said the position is currently vacant and was approved 4 years ago. Has it ever been filled?
Mr. Chair, it has not, and we have not had not generated the revenue to this point wherein we felt like we could responsibly fill it.
Okay, so you haven't had enough applicants paying the full freight to actually justify having the position.
That's correct. We would love to have filled this position because, frankly, it's put a bit of a burden on our existing staff in a program that's designed to take the burden off them to get this program up and running. It's now generating revenue at a level that we believe that we can fill this position and begin to move forward.
So the intent would be, in terms of full freight, would be that this position would be continued to be funded from applicants that were paying the full freight for the application?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any additional questions on the first two? Hearing none, we can go on.
We're at POP 132. This, again, continues 2 positions that have been in existence for 4 years. They were part of an agreement that we made with you all and with the user community to provide other funds, fee revenue, to get us two new positions in that transfer program that we talked earlier about today. Again, these are positions that we think have really paid off in terms of bringing that backlog, bringing those backlog trends the right direction. It's reduced that backlog. And it's tied to, as you can see, three different key performance measures with the agency. We think this has been a very successful piece of our portfolio, and we'd like to see it continued. Again, other funds. POP 133 continues a position that's supported through the Water Management and Conservation Plan fees that we talked about. We talked about this program a little earlier today. Again, this continues one FTE of other fund and ultimately provides us the staff essential to do timely plan review. So, Mr. Chair, we'd like to continue this other fund position as well.
Questions on 132 or 133? Seeing none, please go on.
Thank you. We're to POP 134. Stream flow monitoring and water management. And again, this continues a key position out of our Bend Regional Office. This is essentially an assistant water master position. Again, other funds. It's in our South Central region. It's supported with funding from the county. So this is one of those county water masters. It's been a limited duration position. And again, we'd ask you, Mr. Chair, with this other fund position to continue it. It's critical to water management in Central Oregon. POP 137, groundwater registrations. This is the program that we just talked about a few minutes ago relative to House Bill 5501. This continues the half of position that has been authorized there. Again, an other fund position. And ultimately, as this program moves forward, we think this will be critical to us being able to get the job done relative to groundwater registrations without impacting severely our other activity in that arena. So again, other funds, we'd appreciate your support with this one.
Any questions? Seeing none, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, POP 142. This is a data entry in our start cart position in our, actually it's in our information services division, but all those start cards we receive when well drillers start a well, this is a position that specifically is designed to get that data in a usable form so it can be accessible to our managers and our customers around the state. So it puts the start card data in to the database, again, other fund position, and is tied, as you can see, to three different key performance measures.
So $136,000 is biennially one person plus all their payroll and other expenses to do data entry?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct. So that's a...
Yeah, biennially, right.
That's 2 years. And these are... While we call them data entry positions, they're actually a higher classification than that because this does require some technical expertise. In other words, it's not just punching numbers into a database. It does require some technical expertise, some GIS mapping type of skill to be able to do it adequately. So this is one of the senior positions in that program.
And just a quick follow-up. OPE? I mean, is someone, so if you cut that in half, are we talking like $45,000 a year in salary and $20,000 in OPE? I mean, is that how much you end up spending on things like this?
Mr. Chair, I think we're about 33% OPE, or maybe it's higher than that. I'll ask Mike to join us here.
For the record, I'm Mike Ahman. I'm the administrator for the Administrative Services Division at Oregon Water Resources. Mr. Chair, Representative, that would be correct. We're running this biennium with current health care costs. OPE's projected to run for a position like this around 50%, actually. So we would be looking at a substantial portion in OPE.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I might just clarify, too, the package, the personal services costs are less than $100,000 of this total. It's $93,000 for the two-year period. And then there's another $43,000 in services supplies, including $30,000 for data processing. So they've got some SNS, quite a big, heavy SNS load on this package. It's one of the reasons why it's so much higher for a lower-ranking position.
Thank you, Paul. POP 161, we'd like to continue, Mr. Chair and members, the Klamath adjudication. I almost winced to say it, but we would like to continue and get the job done.
Kill this one.
Does the committee have any interest in this one?
Now, I would like to note for the record, Mr. Chair, that where I'd be applying myself, the two FTE are not making $1 million in salary and OPE in this position. This does reflect the total package in the governor's budget, which includes two FTE. But most of that, obviously, is not in those two FTE expenses. A very significant amount of the budget here, our legal costs, our funding the Office of Administrative Hearings, which are conducting all the hearings, our specific lawyers that are assigned to us from the Department of Justice. We do have a full-time FTE that's related to the Klamath Basin. So this is the entire package related to the Klamath Basin adjudication for the next 2 years.
Clarification, maybe Mr. Siebert. Have we set the DOJ fee at the hourly rate?
Mr. Chairman of the committee, I don't believe that's been set by committee, by the Public Safety Committee. What we're likely to do with this budget...
We go through a process usually at the beginning of each session of setting what the Department of Justice hourly legal services rate will be. And that rate often affects a lot of budgets, actually. So you were saying that...
Mr. Chair, I believe that the subcommittee is working on that, but the plan is to do that adjustment and all the other kind of statewide adjustments in one bill at the end of session that would adjust all the budgets that have already been passed. So instead of holding up everything to wait to find out what the AG rate is, what the DAS, Central Government Service Charges rate is, we run a bill at the end, a reconciliation bill, towards the end of session that goes back and adjusts all the budgets you've already seen for the technical changes like the change in AG rate.
Okay. Mr. Chair, is that it was 111, I heard it was 128. It was someplace between 111 and 128.
I think that's approximately.
Approximate.
Some bienniums, I believe it was 2003, when the Attorney General came in with a fairly good rate, we gave them very little because it actually affected so many budgets. So we basically, I think we effectively may have actually reduced the size of the department a little bit. Yes.
Chair, Phil, just to put the package in my head, this is for the biennium, so it's a two-year budget. We have the tribes and the feds yet to adjudicate, but this will take us to the conclusion.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'd love to assert that affirmatively.
Barring lawsuits,
this will take us pretty much through the hearings process. I think. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, but this will take us to the conclusion of the administrative hearings phase. Then the department will need to put all those findings into a final order of determination and deliver it to the circuit court. So does that sound right, Mike? So this will get us really close to having the state's job done.
One final, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, we can look and see. This
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Yes.
Phil, does this include legal costs?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it does. The state's legal costs. Sadly, it doesn't include anything for the for our customers out there. One interesting note with the adjudication, Mr. Chair, Representative, is that the private participants in this process all have paid fees to participate. The federal government was not required under the court cases that that were pursued all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court to pay any fees. So the federal government has not contributed, with the exception of their own legal work, to their process like the citizens of, and taxpayers of Oregon have.
We're supposed to be surprised. Please proceed.
So that was our first general fund pop, and again, that gets us to what we would characterize as full funding for the adjudication. The next pop is our second general pop, general fund pop. Again, this is a key policy option package that the governor has chosen to incorporate into our budget recommendation to you all. And it's 5 new field staff, 1 in each of our regional offices around the state. And we would tie this POP very directly to 3 different key performance measures, our efficiency measure, our ability to monitor compliance, and our protection of in-stream water rights. Again, one of the things our water masters do is, because fish don't use the phone, they keep a close eye on those in-stream water rights to make sure that within the priority system they are protected, and these positions would have a direct impact on our ability to do our field work effectively.
Questions? Okay. Please proceed.
So, Mr. Chair, we're to POP 304, which is our flow monitoring, which is a small general fund POP relative to flow monitoring equipment. This actually, we've identified, if my recollection's correct, about 50 gauging stations that are in critical need of upgrading to bring them into the modern era. This would cover about half the cost of upgrading those stations. We're also working with OWEB to cover a portion of these costs as well. So we've estimated our total cost for making the upgrades to these 50 stations at about $200,000. This would cover half of that, and then we're hopeful of receiving a grant from OWEB to cover a portion of this as well. We've been talking with them over the last several months, and we'll have an application in later this spring. Again, critically important for developing the science information that we need to manage the water.
Question on?
Yes.
For the OWEB portion, Phil, I'm assuming that's using capital measure 66 monies.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe that's correct.
So how does that work? You said you're going to apply for a grant. So that's not, because we do direct allocation for measure 66 for capital. So this is not a direct allocation. You're actually going to go and apply for a grant to OWEB?
Chair, Representative, that's exactly correct. And actually, Paul put us on this trail some months ago, actually more than months ago, but quite some time ago, and we began to talk with Tom Beiler about the possibility here. As you know, his preference is to work through the grant into their program, and we've been talking with their staff extensively, and we think we've got a path identified for this to fit in to their existing processes.
And in my discussions with OWEB, I think other than the actual appropriations that we make that are fairly sizable into some other areas, there are a couple of agencies, at least 2 to 3, that are going to probably pursue this avenue of at least it's being talked about in terms of actually pursuing a grant versus a direct appropriation. It's the director of OWEB and would like to preserve the process to some extent.
I understand that. And I don't have as much problem with the capital funds because mean, this is going to help get keep water in stream and, you know, tell us how much we have for fish. So I think there is a direct relationship here to plan for salmon and watersheds. But I was just curious because we have done direct allocations in the past, so this is a new era for the web.
Okay. Representative Berger, you looked like you had a question.
No.
You're okay.
One last
Representative Verrock.
Phil, does DEQ use information from your agency?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I certainly believe that the stream flow information is extensively used by DEQ. Yes, sir.
Do they compensate? I mean, do you charge them for that?
We do not, Mr. Chair, Representative. So what Barry had just mentioned, Mr. Chair and Representative, is that they have been partners with us in installing some equipment in different parts of the state and covered those costs, but we don't charge them for data that we make available at this point.
POP 306. Again, another general fund POP, but this one essentially has zero budget impact. It's reclassifying one of our hydrogeologists from an NRS 3 to an NRS 4. This is a man who has been working at the NRS 4 level for the last bit of time. This simply recognizes that and codifies it in the budget. Adds a step to his classification.
Any questions?
POP 401. These are all important POPs. This is important to note that this was a position that went away as a part of the budget cuts last biennium. So the governor has chosen to ask you to restore this position in our budget. One reason I think this is important to talk about a minute is that this was the position that collected all the water measurement data that folks who are required to report to us send in. So this was the position that collected that data, that manipulated it, managed it, and put it in a form useful to the agency as a whole and to the other folks who use our water measurement data around the state. That position's been gone for the last 2 years. Again, that means that we have not been effectively managing this data that's come in. This POP restores that position, something that we believe is extremely critical for proper water management.
Yes, I think we've
talked. May I ask a question?
Yes.
Phil, you just used the word manipulate the numbers. Could you define what manipulation is?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I meant that in a good way. when information comes in, it's in the raw form. And we have not had for the last 2 years someone to process, would have been a better descriptor, that information effectively. So to take it and plug it in the holes where it needs to go to fit into our database so it's clearly articulated.
Thank you for that explanation.
Mr. Chair, to POP 403, with your permission?
Yes.
This is the Oregon Water Supply and Conservation Initiative, which we've talked about before. It includes 3 FTE and just short of $900,000 in general fund. And it's tied, as you can see, to a number of our key performance measures. Number 8, number 1, number 6 and 7, number 9, and number 14. So if we could go to the next slide, Debbie. I just would note again, these are the 5 things that this policy option package does. It will assess the water needs in coming years for the state of Oregon. What's our need going to be? What's our current unmet need? And I'd note here that this relates to both in-stream or environmental needs as well as out-of-stream or consumptive use. Secondly, it will inventory potential storage sites.
again, both above and below ground, and we're finding that there is significant potential for below ground storage in the state. Third, it will analyze where we can conserve and reuse water more effectively in the state. Again, the reuse piece is a piece that we think there is tremendous potential in, and we want to make sure we identify where those opportunities are. Fourth is it will tell us how much each basin yields in terms of water on an annual basis. And we'll factor into that work that ODF&W has recently done in terms of the peak flow requirements that fish have, so that we make sure we don't give away water that are needed at peak flow need times for fish. And the final piece of that is a small little package of money to help local jurisdictions who are involved in planning for their future water supply needs, counties, local governments, allow us to provide them some funding to partner with us to put some plans together to meet those needs. So, Mr. Chair, I believe that concludes our POP. So I'd like to say there were four or five more, but I think that's it.
Representative Binfeld.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've already talked to Debbie about this, so I've given her a heads up. But if you could, Phil, talk to me a little bit about your decision to use FTE instead of consultants to perform some of these. And, you know, for full disclosure, I work for a firm that does some of this work, and I'm asking this thinking about how effectively to use our state resources, in that when I look at the dollar amounts that when we're spending a third on, basically paying for benefits and other things, thinking about for some of these tasks that are somewhat discreet, I guess I'd like to hear your justification for using FTE versus going out and doing competitive bid, especially when I look at, doing the seasonal basin yields, things that are somewhat discrete tasks. So if you could sort of expand on that would be helpful.
To give him also some sort of reference point for this, I don't know if Representative Binkfelter was here that day, but we had a very interesting discussion with another department that was making a compelling case, or what they believe is a compelling case, for having to utilize consultants to do a major project.
Yeah, I was here with DLCB.
You were here.
Yeah. And I know that firm. But so I guess it would be helpful just to know your reasoning. And,
yeah.
And I'm assuming these are limited duration versus permanent FTE?
I believe so. Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, excuse me, Madam Vice Chair. Too many committees. We're appearing before too many committees.
Mr. Chair yesterday, so okay.
You got one more tonight.
Yeah.
I used to work in adult corrections. I've been called a lot worse.
Representative, I think that's an excellent question. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it a little bit. I just hope that my responses line up with what Debbie shared with you earlier. And Barry may want to tap me on the shoulder if I missed the point here. I think the first thing I'd note is that this package anticipates both the use of contractors and the use of FTE in the agency. And, Representative, we think... And this goes back to an old policy decision we made some years ago when we began to embed our staff in the USGS groundwater studies that we began to initiate, a decade or more ago here in Oregon. Now, a lot of states just would watch those groundwater studies from afar, get the results, and work according to those results. We made a policy decision years ago that we would be partners in those processes, because what you gain is that we now have hydrogeologists that know the groundwater resource in these basins that have been studied, that are members of our staff and intimately know the characteristics of the groundwater. So it's not just a situation where we're taking a study off the shelf and attempting to apply it. I believe as we designed this package, the same philosophy was driving us. What we hope to develop is some expertise in the agency that will assist us in managing, expertise and knowledge base that will assist us over time in managing and implementing this program. So again, we don't just end up with a document with a bunch of numbers in it that sits on the shelf, but we will have members of our staff who have actually constructed a large portion of the results that understand it intimately and can attempt to help us implement that more effectively.
And Dingfelter has a follow-up.
And I appreciate that, Phil, and, you know, and I absolutely support. I know you guys have been understaffed for a long time, but I guess what I'm trying to understand is, and maybe I need clarification, whether these are permanent FTEs or not.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative, these are limited duration.
So I guess what I'm trying to understand, if they were permanent FTEs and you plan to keep them on long term, then they would have that knowledge base to implement, I'm assuming, the supply and conservation initiative. But if you're looking at limited duration and they may end up staying with the agency or not, that's where I'm trying to figure out whether, you know, having full-time FTEs versus consultants, and maybe see if there's a mix here where just what I want to do is get the biggest bang for a buck, and because this is an expensive study, and make sure we get the most scientific information for almost $1 million study. And so I guess that was the part that jumped out at me, is if we're going to have these folks on for 2 years and then we may or may not be able to keep them on, depending on if you go to a request for permanent FTEs, I guess that was a question that I had.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think two responses. We may well, and I think we anticipate the implementation phase of this project being the next step, and that a and that we may well come to you a session from now and ask you to continue to authorize some or all of these limited duration positions that have been a part of this equation. So I think that's our thinking, that again, these are subject to you all being satisfied with the initial process and endorsing the next step. But this is something that we would anticipate asking you to continue. The second piece is that these would be folks that would be using intimately our data. And so it would be, in our view, more convenient to have folks sitting in the cube next to other folks that have developed this data. And can we have Barry add something there, Mr. Chair?
Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, I'm Barry Norris with the department. Now, I'd just like to add, too, that the three FTE, one of them would be a surface water hydrologist that would be working with our existing two people in our water availability program and our surface water hydrology. The basin yield project is similar to what we have now for surface water availability, in that we've defined sub-basins throughout the state and we've taken a statistical approach to determine the exceedance surface water flows. It would be a very similar process to go through to establish the basin yield. It's similar, but similar methods and science, but different data, type data. So the existing surface water hydrologist that we have, Rick Cooper, would be intimately involved in that project, and this person would assist and also at the same time take over some of the duties that Rick's performing to enable Rick to be involved in that process, to understand it, be an author of it, and then he is a permanent position, would remain with the department. Similar in the dam safety program, this a position for the surface water storage sites would work right along with the state dam safety engineer and the dam safety program specialist to identify the surface water sites throughout the state, would take over some of the duties of the existing dam safety program person, while that program person who has a lot of knowledge about all the existing surface water sites and a lot of the proposed surface water sites, has a lot of the data and so on, would assist, and they would work as a team to develop this project. And then lastly, the groundwater hydrologist that would be assigned to identify the below ground surface locations would work intimately with the rest of the groundwater hydrologist who generally specialize in different areas of the state. So they understand the structural geology and they understand the hydrology. And they will be able to provide an enormous amount of information and then get a lot of feedback as that program develops. And so we'll retain the institutional knowledge if that position should go away with the existing full-time groundwater hydrologists that make up the groundwater section.
Thank you, Mary.
Okay.
Yes. Any additional? Yes, Senator Nelson.
Thank you. The private consultants hiring those folks, is there, you're looking at a percentage like one-third of it might go to hiring private consultants or something along those lines?
$567,980.
Okay, where does that show at?
The big book.
Yeah. The big book. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I might just note, there's a little bit of confusion about the status of these positions, if they're permanent or limited duration. But I can assure you, if the package is approved for recommendation by LFO, we'll be recommending they be made limited duration. But what they are in GRB, there's a little bit of confusion.
Don't take this wrongly, Mr. Siebert. It has been my experience positions are most often, new positions are recommended limited duration, regardless of whether or not they're permanent in nature, until it can be evaluated over time what effect the new positions have. Is that a fair statement?
A very fair statement, Mr. Chair.
Chair, I just add for the record that Mr. Siebert has done a very good job keeping us honest on that issue in recent years.
Okay. What do we have left in your presentation at this point?
Well, the next place that we have in our presentation document, Mr. Chair, is the efficiencies report.
And then after that?
And then after that, the related legislation piece. And then basically just some cleanup, some noting to you what we've provided you in terms of the appendixes, budget notes, a brief summary of our budget, our peer review piece, which has some interesting information in it.
Well, why don't we do this rather than start into an area that we will not complete so that we can keep the committee more focused. We'll start with the efficiencies piece tomorrow. And I think we'll have plenty of time, and then we have public testimony, I understand, next week. And so I believe we've got plenty of time left. So with that, why don't we adjourn for today, and appreciate you all being here, and we'll see you back tomorrow morning at 8:30.
Thank you, Mr.